Welcome to The Meaning of the Movie, your podcast about what matters most when it comes to the film. This is the podcast where Rob picks a movie, makes Andrew watch it, and then they discuss it. And I think you're really going to enjoy this episode because we're going to dive into the themes, the characters, and everything else that matters in this movie. Andrew, what's up? Welcome to the show.
Well, that is maybe the most accurate description of this podcast in the last like year and a half. Because that is what's happening. Is Rob picks a great movie that I really should have seen by now, forces me to watch it, and then we talk about how great it is. That is what this podcast is. And what movie are we talking about today?
Well, today is Parasite, and I don't want you to feel guilt or shame or like I was throwing shade about that, because it excites me so much that you're watching this for the first time. I'm actually bracing myself for your reaction, because I never know going in. Like, I'm here on this podcast. I don't know if you're going to love it. I don't know if you're going to hate it. And so, but we don't discuss much of our context going into it. And so I just learned right before I hit record that you had never seen this movie, which is why I peppered that into the intro. But I just want to get right into it and ask you straight up, one, why had you never seen this movie? Like, why did you put it off? Or what did you think or expect going into this movie beforehand? Surely you knew of it.
Yes, I absolutely knew of it back in 2019 when it came out, correct?
Yep.
To me, I saw it as this sort of like foreign language film that everyone really loved, that like film buffs should see. Oh, I'm not going to pronounce the director's name correctly.
It is Bong Joon-ho.
Bong Joon-ho, right? Like he did Old Boy. I knew how like viscerally uncomfortable Old Boy was. I've never seen it, but that was my context for this director. And so I wasn't like jumping at the chance to see Parasite. I just didn't like know what it was going to be. But I didn't think it was going to be something that was like center of pop culture or film conversation. And then it gets nominated for a bunch of Oscars, including Best Picture. And I was like, okay, it'll win Best Foreign Film. That makes sense. There's a lot of those every year. And then it goes on to win Best Picture. And at that point, I was like, okay, what is this movie? But as you've said on our Oscar episodes beforehand, if you don't watch Oscar movies before the Oscars, you're probably not going to.
It's true.
And so that's where I ended up being with this movie, was like, I missed it.
I want to say, like, my experience with it was I knew who the director was. I had seen The Host. I had seen other movies that were pretty, like, terrifying. And so I really expected this to be a straight horror. And when I went and saw it, I went and saw it at Alamo Drafthouse, I think by myself one night. I was just like, I've got to see it. And I was so terrified at first. I was like, oh, man, the gas is getting into their house. That's going to turn them all into monsters. Their faces are going to start falling off. Like, I was really bracing myself for a horror for the first half of this movie, and then slowly settled into it of like, oh, this is kind of like a Three's Company episode. It's like a caper thing. It's like a misunderstanding. They're like tricking them and that sort of thing. I was like, oh, how quirky, how funny. And then it kind of drips back into a horror. And so I was just like, this thing is an absolute roller coaster. And I mean, it's one of those movies when the credits rolled and I was like, what just happened? That thing was incredible. So what was your feeling when the credits rolled? Did you, like, with all that context going into it, did you like it? Did you not like it? Or more importantly, like, how did you feel watching this movie?
I think when the credits rolled, I think my feeling was wow. And I think there's a couple obviously key turns in this movie that makes it from fun and interesting and, oh, this is a cute indie darling, right? And makes it like something to really talk about. There's a couple of key scenes in the movie that really turn it. And so I would say about the first half of the movie, I was sort of under the impression that you were like, oh, this is fun. Like, this is interesting. This is not your typical, even like American family caper, right? Like, this isn't We're the Millers. Like, it was the fact that it's set in South Korea, right? There really is another identity to this film. Cause it's by and about, you know, people from South Korea, right? And so I was like, this is charming is not the right word, but like, this is kind of fun. And then there's a very key turning point in the center of the movie that we're not quite there yet. And it was in that moment, there's a pretty prolonged sequence in like the center of the movie, middle to end of act two, that just, like, I was leaning forward, like, wow, what on earth is this? Like, this is so interesting and unexpected and crazy.
Yeah, I think it's one of the, like, I couldn't remember. I almost put it in the show notes about midpoint twists. Mm-hmm. And I think we've talked about midpoint twists before, but to me, this is one of my favorite ones of like what a midpoint twist should be, which is you think you're watching one thing and then it completely turns upside down, but it doesn't waste everything that you've watched before.
Right.
It still builds on what came before, but it's so surprising. And then you're like, oh my gosh, we're in a different story now.
Right. So do you want to just jump into, how do you want to handle this? How do you want to talk about this movie? Because there really is like the first half and the second half.
Yeah, I mean, I almost wrote out a series of things that I love about this movie because kind of like I did with Zodiac, like Zodiac's my favorite movie of the 2000s. This is my favorite movie of the 2010s just because it is, there's nothing like it.
Yeah.
It's so special to its culture, to the way it's crafted and that sort of thing. So I think we should just take it piece by piece, I guess, to answer your question.
Yeah.
And so maybe let's just start with your most meaningful scene. Like maybe we just jump right in there of like, what is your most meaningful scene?
Okay. So I thought my most meaningful scene as I'm watching the movie, I thought my most meaningful scene was going to be when they're all sitting on the couch, basically having a living room campout party in their employer's house. I thought that was going to be my most meaningful scene. And I'm still probably going to say that it is, because it's the first time where all the layers are really peeled back on who these people are. I think what's really interesting about the first part of the movie is this sort of slow unpeeling of the facade that people put up just in daily life, and then the facade they're putting up for obviously the family that they're conning, but sort of this breakdown of what really do we want, what really drives us, what is behind all of their desire to do what they're doing. And I thought that scene mapped it out really well, and you could sort of see even within the family, like who the heroes and villains in the family, if you want to put it that bluntly, it's really cloudy, right? There isn't like a straight villain or straight hero, but like you could see everyone's motivation so clearly. And I thought that scene really made me take stock of all the characters that I was watching. And then it didn't allow me to think about it at all, because that's when the movie totally flips on its head and changes.
Well, let's stay on the first part for a minute. Were you rooting for the family? How did you feel when they were conning the whole family? Like, did you feel like, oh, this is fun and cool to do this? Or did you feel like, oh, this is disgusting, they're horrible? Like, how did you feel about this con they were doing?
I felt a little bit in the middle. I think because I went in knowing that the protagonists were somewhat unlikable, I think I had heard that at some point, which I think helped me, like, brace for it. I think I may have been a little bit more put off had I been surprised by that, just as, like, a personal preference thing. But I do think the first part of it, I found like a little charming, like when the son, and when the son creates the opportunity for his sister, and then the way that the sister is like creating the art therapy thing because she Googles it online. Like all of that to me was a little bit like catch me if you can. Like there's not there's not a victim here. Right. Like it's an almost victimless crime, kind of. Right. Like it's not, but like it's kind of charming. And then once they start like getting people fired, that's when it started to start feel kind of gross to me, especially the housekeeper woman. But even that was like, they made it fun in the way that they were like doing all of the, it was like a heist where they were like getting orange fluff and like, you know, texting each other and then like blowing orange fluff on the maid. Like it was still somehow fun, even though it was gross.
Yeah, a heist is a really good way to say it. It did feel like Ocean's 11 or something like that, where it's like, hey, we have all these people and we're working together to do this. I thought it was especially charming. The dad, who's like kind of like I'd read one description of him as like the Tom Hanks of North Korea. Like he's this really sort of, of Korea. He's this really famous, well-known actor.
Not North Korea.
Yeah. I was like, I'm going to get canceled for saying that. South Korea. But he's this beloved actor, and for his son to be giving him acting lessons of like, he has a script and he's like, no, deliver it more like this, say it more like this. And they're intercutting between his speech and then the scripted out piece of paper, and he's giving him lessons. It was just like, it was kind of fun, and it was endearing that this family, even though they're parasites, even though they're leeches, they care about each other and they love each other, and they're like cheering each other on to do this heist. It was like the ultimate family bonding activity, which I found just endlessly fascinating.
Yeah, I agree. And I think just to kind of give kudos to this movie and why I think it like probably deserves Best Picture, like for sure. Like I'm all in on it. Like the craft of this movie a little bit. The first scene where we meet everyone, like, I feel like this movie is such a masterclass in the show don't tell principle, right? Yes. Introducing characters by putting them in situations and not explaining who they are, or having someone walk up to someone else and be like, oh, this is my best friend. He's super smart, right? Like they just put them in situations in which you understand the characteristics of this family. And that first scene where they're trying to steal new Wi-Fi. Right. They're so mad that the lady upstairs put a password on the Wi-Fi router, and they're like climbing on top of the toilet in order to find a new Wi-Fi connection from the new coffee shop. Because, and you can't tell, are they too poor or too lazy? Right. Like, and then like, And so then they're like folding the boxes, and somehow they're having fun doing it. And the cockroach thing. So when you're saying like all the smoke pours in, they're like, it's free cockroach cleaning. You're like, it's this weird mix of like, is this just gross? Like, are these kind of bad people, or are these just poor people? Right. And to me, that's going to get to my meaning of the movie in like 45 minutes. But I really love the beginning of this movie and setting up the sort of uniqueness of this family and making you question like, what is happening in this family? Like, what is driving them? Like, are they bad people, or are they just in a bad situation and they don't care anymore? Like, they're really a fascinating. They're not a typical protagonistic family at all. They're very unique.
Well, just to kind of drill into that a little bit, one of the central questions of this movie is, who is the parasite?
Right.
Like who? Like, it's called Parasite, but we're never told who the parasite is. And so, I mean, who do you think the parasite is?
By the end of the movie, like, it's tough. I think this family ultimately are not good people. I think they are morally questionable people. But I do think that meaning of the movie, who is the parasite? If that's the question of the movie, is it the rich people or the poor people? I'm saying the rich people. I think the end of the movie makes a much stronger case that is the rich people in this society who are the parasites.
Yeah, and I think we'll drill into that even more, but I just think it's interesting to think about as we have this discussion, because it's definitely on the movie's mind, or it's definitely what I was, because when I went into it, I was like, oh, it's Parasite. I'm thinking literal. So I'm like, oh, they're going to have flesh eating. It's like his other movie is called Host, and it's about this monster in the ocean kind of doing all this sort of stuff. And so I thought, oh, this is a parasite. It's a literal monster.
It's a literal monster movie, yeah.
And then halfway through, I realized, no, that's not. It's really like, okay. And it definitely, the first half makes the case that these people are the parasite. This woman is naive, but undeserving of having being fleeced like this. And yes, where they kind of cross the line is where they take the maid woman's job and say she has tuberculosis and put the sriracha packet in and all that sort of stuff. And really, that to me, that's where they cross the line of like, are they good or are they bad? At first, it's like, they're just kind of making stuff up. They still need a limo driver. They have disposable income, so why not give it to these people instead?
Well, they do. But now they do get the limo driver fired too.
Right. That's true. That's a great point. Yeah, she does the whole thing of taking her underwear off in the back of the thing, and then that makes him. And that's a pretty nasty way to like get him fired. It's like
I do feel like that one was like not like a 50% thing, but like the driver is pushing to drive her all the way home, which. In, like at the jump makes you feel like, is the driver maybe a little bit of a scumbag?
Right.
Like, is he a little predatory? Cause he pushes a little too hard to not just take her to the train station. So you're already thinking like, oh, is this driver going to be a problem? And which is clearly sort of like what turns her head. And she goes, oh, okay, well maybe he is. So I'll just do this. Right. Or it's not even as a way to get back at him, but here's my opportunity. Here's maybe a believable way. To any rate, so like you sort of question whether or not he's a good person or not, and he's not really part of the movie, but the maid is pitched as nothing but like, you know, like she's been with the house forever. It's like it's her home more than the other people's. Like you are made to think that the maid is like grandma, right? And so it feels really gross when they take her out.
Okay, so what was your most meaningful scene? I feel like we've talked around it, but did you say?
Yeah, what I think my most meaningful scene is that scene then when they've fully converted the staff positions to be all theirs at the at this rich family's house. And the rich family goes camping and they're all just sitting there on the couch, like having a party basically and living it up and drinking all the alcohol. And they're all just talking about what they would do if they had this money and should they have this money. And you can see that like the son who really started this somehow feels like he has purer motives, that he has dreams, and the dad feels like he's given up on society and he just wants to like take. And so it's in this moment where you start to feel that like the dad is more of a parasite than the son. And to me, I started seeing that and finding that interesting of like, okay, there is this whole family is a team, but within this, we're getting this different dynamic. And I thought that that was going to be the crux of the second half of the show, but it is not.
Yeah. I mean, for me, God, it's so hard with the most meaningful scene. I would just say like, I want to highlight two, I guess. One is the first moment when they're all sitting at the party and the doorbell rings and it's the maid and or housekeeper lady and she's come back and it's pouring rain and she wants to come in and it's just like such an invasion on that. And it's so frightening of like, who is she? Why is she back? And then moments later when she gets the call, and then all of a sudden the real family's coming back and they have to clean up and all of a sudden they have to like, they're about to be caught and end up hiding under the couch. Just that whole sequence was so tense. And just by a family like laying underneath the couch was more scary than like all the Saw movies combined. I was like, this is so frightening and intense. And the level of storytelling where I knew exactly what was at stake, exactly how much they had done wrong. And I was rooting for them to get away with it, but I wasn't sure that they should get away with it. And so it was just like, that's where my jaw was dropped. I was like,
yes,
this is so special and so interesting to tell a story like this, which I've never seen.
Right. And to me, that is the best. I feel weird saying that's the best scene because it's like 45 minutes of the movie. Like it's an entire sequence, what you're talking about.
Right.
But I do think that is the best part of the movie. Hands down, is from the time the maid walks in to the time that they ultimately escape the apartment. But we've missed a very key point in that segment that we keep dancing around. Do you want to talk about the surprise when the ex-maid walks in?
Yeah, I mean, so she walks in and you realize that her husband has been living in the basement for years and the kid thinks he sees a monster. And at first you're just like, oh, and I had seen trailers for this and the trailers really play up the monster looking up the stairs and that sort of thing. And so I thought that was going to be something to it. But you realize like, no, the kid just saw the husband trying to sneak up for food at one point. And so he is another literal parasite in the home, which is like he is feeding off the spoils and everything else and almost has his own like insane religion just down in the basement. Where he's like, he has this light to flick on and off with to communicate with his wife. And it's really like disgusting and bizarre and funny. All of it with this guy who's like just this kind of basement dwelling freak.
Yeah. I mean, everything in the movie up to that point felt very like rooted in reality. Like it doesn't get sci-fi or monster-y, but like it felt very rooted in like this is a upper class versus lower class drama. Like, you know what genre you're in, right? And it's not the monster movie you think it is, right? Like it and then as soon as the maid shows up, it did feel like something is about to happen, especially when she walks in the front door and like you see it on her face, like she knows something they don't, right? Like as soon as she walks in the door, the power dynamic shift immediately. And she like walks downstairs and is like, she opens up a secret door and that secret door is like more stairs. It's in the basement and that the door she opens is more stairs, even deeper into the basement. And it reminded me very slightly of the film Barbarian back from 2021, which is a terrifying film. I wish I'd
Well,
never
I think
seen.
Barbarian was inspired by this film. I think no doubt this kind of basement and what's going on and this house where there's a basement you don't know. I think that sparked some inspiration for Barbarian.
So a basement of a basement is terrifying. Like,
yeah,
basements are terrifying to begin with, but a basement on a basement is like, I don't know why that strikes such it feels unnatural maybe, but there's something about that imagery that is particularly frightening. I think, you know, and I'm not sure why, but anytime a movie has a basement on a basement, like it makes my skin like crawl.
Well, it's something like, oh, there's something living deep in these people's house and they don't know, they have no idea. And they, you know, they thought there was one area that they would never go to, but there's something much deeper in there where there's a toilet and food being eaten. And it's just like the amount of like filth and rats and whatever. It just, that whole fit space did feel like very claustrophobic, as well as there's real violence that happens in that film once they're trying to keep the secret with the text message and all that sort of thing. Like,
yeah,
she's about to send the text to them and then they're like literally like throwing her down the stairs and tying her up, and just like it becomes so violent of this one little text that's about to be sent. So that's crazy too.
Well, and so let's just talk about how great that sequence is, because we're just like in it. So let's just keep diving in. So the first moment of like stress is the old maid going to send the text revealing that all of these new employees are a family and basically it's a con job, right?
Right.
So then that turns into this violence that you were talking about, right? Where they're like all over, you know, literally fighting for the phone. People are getting punched and, you know, like it feels life or deathy. And then in the middle of that, the mom gets a text that the rich family is 8 minutes away. And so what was like just the upping of the stakes, right? What has to happen in 8 minutes? They have to clean up what is basically like a high school house party, right?
Right.
Right. They have to clean up the booze and the everything that's broken and the garbage everywhere, right? They've trashed the house, basically. They've got to get the diary back. But now it's not just cleaning up. Oh, the mom has to cook a meal that she does not know how to cook. But not only that, which is very like almost standard fare for like your parents are coming home. It's like a Ferris, like that would be a Ferris Bueller version of this, right?
Right.
But on top of that, they now have to rehide the other people. Like, so it's against the clock and they're actively fighting these two other people, which is ultimately like and the family gets home before they're done. So they're still like sweeping things under the couch and the family walks in. And that's how the old maid gets kicked down the stairs. The mom like turns around, sees her, rich lady's in the kitchen. And the mom just like half kicks her down the stairs without looking. It's wild. It's the stakes just keep like they just keep rising.
Yeah. And then they're just trapped underneath this couch. And it's so shocking. And it's just such an incredible sequence. And then I guess kind of looking towards the end, like it gets paid off one more time, which is later on in the movie, all these people come back, they have a big house party together, it's like a big birthday party, and then it's like all the sins, there's like everyone in this movie has, I think that's the other thing that I love about it, is everyone's at fault, everyone's making a mistake, everyone's sinning, and then it's like all those sins come to the forefront, which I guess like to unpack that more would lead me into my most meaningful character. So can I talk about that now?
Yeah, let's do it.
So my most meaningful character is the dad. And the reason why, one thing that I love with the dad is like when he's driving around in the limo and the other dad, who owns the house. I don't have any of these names up in front of me.
The rich dad.
Let's just say rich dad, poor dad. So the rich dad who's driving all around, when he's driving the limo, he's like, do you smell that? And then, you know, and even one of the kids smells one of the other kids. And she's like, they all smell the same. And so they have to, like, you know, change their laundry detergent and that sort of stuff. But he says, do you smell that once when he's driving the car? He says, do you smell that again when they're lying underneath the couch? And then the final time he says, "Do you smell that?" is when they have the massive house party, birthday party with everyone out there. And that's what leads him to actually freaking out and, you know, the whole murder and everyone's fighting all at once and that sort of thing happens because of the smell. And I thought that dad just having to take it, like, okay, you're insulting me, but I can't attack back because I have to, like, you know, just smile and be good and okay. And eventually he snaps. He is such a personification of the class war and the sense of pride that is at the core of this movie.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think to me, that character starts out as being such a background character, the dad. Like, it feels like the son and the sister are, like, much more the protagonist when the movie starts.
Right.
And then the dad sort of takes on so much more of that, like, class trauma that you see. And I think it really starts in that scene I was talking about where, you know, they're just all sitting, the family sitting around talking before the rich family comes back. But that twist that happens when they're all hiding under, it's like a giant coffee table. So the rich couple's laying on the couch and they're all hiding under the coffee table.
Yep.
The turn there that happens in the drama is like at this point, you don't really have that much bad to say about the dad or the rich dad. Like, he seems fine, right?
Right.
Like, he's rich, but he's fine. And he's sitting there talking to his wife and he smells the poor dad under the couch, doesn't know, or under the coffee table. He doesn't know he's there, but he starts talking about, like, how bad he smells in the car to his wife. And the dad has to lay there and take it, right? And then the rich mom the next day, he's driving her around and she just rolls the back window down a little bit. It's these, like, little tiny things, but you see this, like, it's in that moment where they're under the coffee table where you see this flip happen in which you're like, I don't know that the poor people in this movie are the parasites.
Yep.
And I think on that note, that leads me to, like, one of my other most meaningful scenes, I think, which kind of started to turn my opinion about what the movie was that I was watching and what the movie was saying. And that's when they finally escape and get out from under the coffee table. Just a wild sequence the whole way through. The dad gets caught, like, he has to stop halfway across the floor when the right. kid outside starts, like, talking on the radio, and you just see his feet at the corner of the frame just lying there, not moving. But when it's been raining outside the whole time, and when they go back to their homes and their home is flooded, and it's not just flooded, it's, like, flooded with sewage.
Right.
And it was in that moment where I was like, and then they all wind up at, like, a shelter for the night. Like, it's like a stadium or something, right? Or like a, you know, like a giant basketball.
Felt like Katrina or something like that. It was just like cots and cots and cots and people.
But it wasn't like a hurricane. It was just a bad rainstorm, right?
Right.
That ended up flooding this area of the city. It has no effect on the rich family at all. They have a party the next morning. And it was in that moment that I was like, these people that I've been following this whole movie, that I've been kind of judging back and forth of, are they just poor? Or are they just lazy? Or are they opportunistic? Or are they, like, morally off kilter, right? Asking all these questions. This family has been built basically, like, their level of income, their place in the society. They are one rainstorm away from sleeping in a shelter. They are one rainstorm away from having their floor covered in sewage. And you're like, suddenly to me, I was like, this is a whole different set of circumstances that has shaped the values of these people. When you are one, and there's this great aerial shot of, like, all of the people in their neighborhood, like, trying to just either get stuff out of their homes or whatever. And again, it's just a bad rainstorm, but they're in this slum that just gets destroyed by a lot of rain. And it's like,
well,
ugh, right? Like, you start feeling differently about this family that you've had questions about.
Well, even there's this climatic scene once they finally escape the house and the rain has been happening and they're standing and it's just, you see rain just kind of rolling down all these steps and they're having this big argument about what are we going to do? How are we going to get out of this? But I think the idea is, like, the rain, you know, the crap rolls downhill, you know, like, for lack of a better word, like the sewage rolls downhill. And so that happens. And our one guy is trapped in the basement, But really, you realize this whole family is trapped in the basement. Their toilet is up on this weird perch. Like, this won an Oscar for production design, and that bathroom, when I think of a bathroom in the movie, this is the first one that I think of that weird ledge that they have to climb up on, and then they're, you know, crouching next to it just to get Wi-Fi. But literally, they're in their own basement. Like, we're like, oh, where this guy lives is so gross. But where they live, they're having to open up and get free termite repellent just to get the bugs out. They're having to fold pizza boxes to try to live. They're eating trash. They're just like, they're kind of trapped in the basement through the whole movie as well. And that rainstorm definitely is absolutely so symbolic of what's been happening to them and who, you know, and what the upper class is doing to the lower class. It's so powerful that I agree that the birthday party happens the same day, and what was apocalyptic for this family was just an inconvenient blip for the upper class family.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did you have a most meaningful character, Andrew?
Yeah, I think the most meaningful character for me was the son. I think he's the character that feels most on the moral line of like, what am I supposed to do with like my circumstances, like my loyalty to my family, like even his question to the girl that he definitely shouldn't be dating because she's a minor and his student. Right. So he's definitely on the wrong side of that moral question. But like he's asking her, like, do I fit in here? And I thought that question at the party before everything breaks loose of him like asking her, like, do, like, he's just looking out the window. He's like, do I belong here? It's what he wants. He wants to not, he wants to succeed. And he probably is the smartest one in his family. I think the movie makes a case for that he is incredibly intelligent and has the ability to rise above his circumstances. But he's sitting there like, even if I do I belong here? Right. And that's kind of the question that he's ultimately wrestling with through the end of the movie. And I'm like, to me, that was really like, again, if we're looking for a likable character in this movie, he was the closest thing I found to one. And I think he's the one that goes on him and the dad certainly go on the biggest journey. And the movie definitely ends on the son's journey or lack thereof.
Yeah. What did you think of the ending of this movie?
Freaking loved it. It's like,
I did too.
It's like a scarier, less beautiful version of La La Land.
Interesting.
I was so curious when like they're doing the letters, right? And he's like writing the letter and he's like, here's my plan, right? Like my plan is like, I'm gonna go out and I'm gonna make a lot of money. And it starts to sort of like flash forward and in time, and you're like, oh, this is the epilogue. But they don't ever show how he makes that money. He just suddenly has money. And I was like, what a weird choice for a movie that seems so concerned with class warfare. Is they don't really show, or not class warfare, but like the distinction and the who is the parasite within our classes, right? They don't show how the kid ultimately rose above his circumstances. I was like, that's a weird jump to make, but whatever. And then it goes all the way and the family buys the house and the dad gets out of the basement. And it's just like a very cathartic ending in a way. And I'm like, okay, there was a couple like steps that they jumped there that feel important to me, but like there's hope.
And there was such devastation. There was such like, they were humiliated. They did all this and then they paid for their sins times 50, right? Like they're humiliated. People die, you know, like
he's
literally damned to this basement forever. And then
I was going to say, we're in spoiler territory, right? Like we can say what happens, right? Yeah. Like the sister who is arguably one of the best people in the family, like she's a little silly, but like not.
Yeah, she's great.
Not a horrible person, right? Like she's fine. Yeah. Like she gets stabbed and bleeds out on the lawn, you know, like she of any of them didn't deserve that.
Right. And this, the poor dad watches his, you know, daughter die, watches, you know, he has to hide in the one place that he can. And he's literally like trapped in this hell where it's like, okay, I thought my life was bad before and whatever else. And the son is like, this was my idea. I did this. And so it was so heroic like you said, like La La Land, where it was like, okay, I'm going to make this right. I'm going to like, I had not put those two together actually, Andrew, but it was like this fantasy of like, you're putting it all together and you think it's real. And then boom, it's ripped away from you of like, nope, I'm going to do this someday. And the truth is that reality probably never happens.
It's never going to happen. Right. Yeah. Right. Like, and it makes so much sense to me of like, cause that's what I was saying. As I was watching it, I was like, I feel like they skipped a couple of key details here that's making this a little bit less powerful for me, but I'm on board. There's hope. They're going for hope. I like it. It's a nice ending. And then it just switches to that shot of the dirty laundry hanging in the window and it pans down to him like finishing the letter. And you're like, oh, none of that happened yet. And none of that is going to happen. Like the feeling of none of that is actually going to happen. And then it just cuts to credits and you're just like, you feel bad at the end of this movie. Like it really does make you think of like, again, this son who seems to be in intelligent and oftentimes has the best intentions, not all the time, but then I start asking like, if you're one flood away from having sewage in your living room, how much is that shaping your morally questionable behavior? You know, right. like he's just sitting there at the end with no way out, despite the fact that he is a smart guy who would be capable of anything that either of the children he was tutoring are capable of, and way more, you know?
Well, I think just what's so amazing about this movie is, one, it comes out in 2019. And this, you know, I'm a big movie year guy, and so I think about the context of all the movies around it.
Yeah.
So in 2019, we have Little Women, we have Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, we have Jojo Rabbit, and we have Joker. Those are like four big ones that come to my mind. And all four of those movies in different ways have class on their mind, like have kind of, if not like Jojo Rabbit isn't necessarily about the class, but it very much is about the powerful and the weak. Mm-hmm. And that like, Joker is about that as well. And these different things of like, okay, there's the haves and the have nots. And Once Upon a Time in Hollywood has the movie star who gets everything. And then the stunt man who has to change the guy's antenna and do everything else. Every one of these movies have class in their mind. And, you know, as human beings, class is such a powerful thing of like, hey, because of this imaginary idea of money, it's not a real thing that exists. And the way that water exists and the way that air exists, it's something that we all agree on and it in theory exists. But because of that, it defines everything about your life.
Yeah.
And this movie deals with class in a way nothing like I've ever seen in such an important societal subject. It's not American. It's very much of its time and place.
Yeah.
But it's also so freaking universal of these themes of like, what it feels like to have everything and what it feels like to have nothing.
Yeah. 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 I mean, one of the things that I think Locke started to turn that message for me, sort of started to turn the screws on the, like, is this rich family who seem quite pleasant and quite nice, right? Like
right.
The first act of the movie, you have no reason to dislike the rich people. Right. This movie doesn't lead with like eat the rich. Like that's not how it starts. They're all very sweet, maybe a little dumb, maybe a little naive, but like they all seem like very good people. But I think when the old maid comes back in the pouring rain and she walks in and reveals that her husband has been hiding in the basement, and you realize that this maid who I felt bad for, right, who'd like been at the house for a long time and whatever, and was maybe an extension of this family to some degree, right? That she was sort of maybe like a nana or grandma character to these children, that like even she, who was in really good standing and had built a life with this family, even she was hiding her own husband in the basement in order to feed him. In that moment, there's this thing of like, is this rich family, they're not good people, probably. Like, suddenly the wealth becomes a huge moral issue before they even came back and were like presented on screen again. Like the fact that that was the maid's secret existence that you don't know about in the first act was like, again, this show don't tell. It made me question everything about this family without them even being on screen.
What I love about this movie is the rich family did not deserve the atrocity that was thrust upon them. They did not deserve to be.
Right.
There's nothing that they did that was so, you know, she's just like, oh, I have an art tutor and oh, we need a limo driver. Like there's a million other rich families that need all those things as well, or have all those things as well,
right,
that do not have their lives turned upside down, bloody murders, you know, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But, and yet you're like, ah, they do deserve something. And so I think that's what's so interesting is like everyone in this movie is guilty. I think in most movies, the rich people are so horrible. They get what they deserve. You know, even in a movie like Knives Out. Oh, that was another 2019 movie, Knives Out, which is a,
great,
you know, a very much a class movie. But everyone in that movie is kind of despicable and they get, you know, what's coming to them.
Yeah.
In this movie, like everyone's flawed, but understandable. Every single motivation, even the lady, even the maid lady with her husband in her basement, she kind of explains the story and you're like, okay, this is weird, but I get it. It's just like, there's nothing else I can do. I feel trapped. And so because I feel trapped, that's why I, you know, get into all this trouble. And
right.
So that's what I like about it so much is like, there is like everyone's villainous, but there is no direct, like, okay, these are the villains, the poor people. Yeah, they're poor. And that's why they do it. It's like, everyone's a sinner in this movie, which creates just a stewing pot of awfulness that bubbles over into something amazing and awful and that you can't take your eyes off of.
Right. And the you can't take your eyes off of it really is, I think, a great way to describe this movie. That, like, just when it might start to get boring, suddenly something is thrown at you that makes it, like, it just keeps going, right? Like, when they finally escape the house after that super long, tense sequence of them, you know, like we talked about, trying to Ferris Bueller the house back together and kick people down the stairs and hide them under the coffee table and not get cut, like, all of that. Like, the movie should have let you take a breath, and it doesn't.
Right.
They immediately, their house is full of, like, sewage. And you're just like, well, Yeah. Like, it does such a great job of just constantly, and then they're at the shelter. Okay, we're gonna take a breath. No, we have to go back to the house and pose at this party, right? Like, it the pacing on the thing, I think it just, it's like an hour, it's 2 hours and 15 minutes, which could be a long movie, and it's great. Like, I watched it when I was even a little bit sleepy, and I like stayed awake for the whole thing. It's great.
Yeah, it just locks you in and you're just like, okay. Because you're just wondering, like, where is this going? And that's why I started out this podcast with, like, oh my gosh, I can't believe you're seeing this with fresh eyes.
Yeah.
I've seen it 4 times now, but it's not one of those movies that you need to, like, you'll pick up so much more and rewatch, but it's so there on the first watch.
Yeah.
You see every single thing that's being set up and exactly like, okay, that was why that was paid off. Even though in the moment you're like, I'm not sure where this is going. But because you're so not sure, you're having to pay attention to all the details.
Right, right. I mean, I don't think I realized it until you were saying now that the, like, all of the drawings that the kid does are of the man in the basement.
Right.
I just thought the kid was just a bad artist.
Right, no, it's his art therapy. It's what he's working out. It's like, oh, those are the monsters that he's seeing. And that's why he needs therapy, is because this guy's in the basement. And they're having to deal with that reality. And so even that is such a, like, beautiful detail that's just kind of thrown in there.
Yeah.
Did you have a least meaningful scene? Is there anything that took you out of it or like, this didn't work for me?
I don't feel like... I think you're right that, like, everyone has a sin in this movie, including the son. I felt like I didn't need him to have started a relationship with, like, a 14-year-old or whoever old she is.
Yeah.
Like, to me, that felt unnecessary to his character. But maybe he wants to, he wants to be the son-in-law. Like, he wants to be in this world. He wants to marry into it, which is another class thing, right?
Yeah, it felt, maybe because I'm connected with him, but it felt more innocent than it did predatory. Like, she was kind of into him, and he was like, oh, yeah, sure. You know, like, he kind of just rolled along with it because he was imagining himself.
Yeah,
as someone who would be found attractive and be accepted by this family and be celebrated.
That's fair.
I have a weird least meaningful scene, which is the pizza boxes at the beginning.
Okay. What?
So they're folding the pizza boxes, right? And then how many get rejected? I'm trying to remember off the top of my head. Like
a quarter.
Half? A quarter? No, something like that?
They say a quarter, which made me think, who's bad at folding pizza boxes? Because there's four people in the family. So I was like, okay, who sucks at this? One of you's bad at it. And they don't ever,
right.
And they don't ever do that. But I thought that was going to be a plot point. So it's, a quarter of them get rejected.
So this is why it's a least meaningful scene to me, because this family is so talented and meticulous at pulling off this plan. This is an Ocean's 11 type of plan, which is they're going in, they're nailing every line, they're thinking about it, they're trapping the other people and getting them kicked out. Like, the way that they actually ingratiate themselves into the home is really fun and really believable. But ultimately, what I have to believe is these are smart, talented people. They may be evil, they may be, put upon by the world, but like, it takes intelligence and creativity to do that. And so I'm like, if they're that smart and talented, if they're willing to do anything for money, why would they do such a bad job folding pizza boxes? Like, what was the point of that, and what was it like supposed to mean and lead to, that they'd be so sloppy at that to like lose some of the money?
I guess that's true. So here's my response to that. To me, that was in the part of the movie where I was questioning this family, and I was saying, like, are they poor or are they lazy? Right. Which is a common thing about, when it comes to class warfare, right? Is, are the poor lazy or are the poor just poor? Right.
Right.
And so I think, especially with the dad, I started out feeling like, in all the things that he was saying, I was like, are they in the circumstance of their own choosing? This is a really deep poll that's not going to connect with anyone listening to this podcast. But in the Lerner and Lowe musical, My Fair Lady, Eliza Doolittle's father, Mr. Doolittle, is a character. He sings the famous song, Get Me to the Church on Time. All right, now I've done my musical theater trivia. Part of what defines his character is that he wants to be poor, is that he doesn't want the responsibility of being like an upper class gentleman, and that he enjoys the life afforded to him by having no responsibility and just skating by. And I was wondering at the beginning of this movie if that was the dad's character in this family. If he was like, hey, I can make a quick buck just folding pizza boxes and I don't have to go to an office and have a real job. If that was his thing. And so to me, that scene was showing me like they are willing to do the bare minimum because maybe like folding pizza boxes is stupid, but then as soon as like a real, like his mind was somewhere else, right? I don't know.
Yeah.
Does that kind of make sense though? That like when
it,
when
it real, does, I
is that he didn't want to put in the effort to this thing that was stupid, but then this better thing came and he was like, oh, this is worth my time. I can get more out of this. And so that's how he becomes smarter. Or like, he hasn't become smarter. He actually applies himself.
I think thematically this movie does, like, again, not directly, it's a show don't tell, but it kind of teases the question of like, are they lazy or are they kind of like just, this is the only job they can get? And right. I don't understand the economics. I don't understand anything well enough to know, but I understand the basis of poverty and, it's complicated. And I know once you're in poverty, it's very, very hard to get out. And so, but I do think that's thematically why that was in there. But it was just in this rewatch that I was like, man, I know what's coming. So I'm like, I know how awesome these people are that they can handle anything.
Right.
How do they mess up folding the pizza box?
Right.
But I think that's a good retort.
Cool.
Anything else that we missed that you want to cover?
I mean, probably a ton. This movie is really layered. I do think that like that center 45 minutes of the movie, from like the family getting home and them trying to sneak out, is just, it's a masterpiece, man. We've said it, like we've already said it, but like it is such a masterpiece of tension and the camera work and just all of the stuff, and how the stakes just keep getting higher and worse as they're just trying to get out of this thing. It's awesome. It's like, that to me was worth the price of admission alone, was just that sequence. It's so good.
How many stars are you giving this movie if you're rating it on Letterboxd or wherever else?
I'd probably give this movie a solid, if it's out of five, I'd probably give it a solid 4.5. Like, it's a great movie.
Yeah, for me, this is like a 5-star. It's just,
yeah,
it's so perfect because it's just like, it's so surprising and inevitable, and this wrestles with really important stuff, and so yeah. That's why I love to talk about it. It's fun and it's twisty and it's clever, but it's rooted in meaning, and that's why I think it's worth talking about. So with all that said, what is your meaning of the movie, Andrew?
So my meaning of the movie is, I think, rooted in the very last shot of the movie, which I talked about a little bit, but is that the son sitting there having doled out his whole plan. You've watched him the whole movie and you see how intelligent he is, right? He's come up with this plan. So the other family members pitch in, but he really is the brains behind this operation. He is the epitome of put your mind to it and you can rise above your circumstances. Like, he gets the job to begin with by, he doesn't have a college degree. His sister helps him fake a diploma, but what does he do? He does the thing where he like touches the girl and feels her heart rate. And he's BSing his way through this, but you see right. How smart he is to just get the job. He's the epitome of, like, I know this is a South Korean movie, but call it the American dream. He's the epitome of, if you apply yourself and you're smart enough, you can get the job. You can rise above your circumstances. And the final image of this movie to me is saying, no, you can't. Right. The crushing image of the fact that his father is likely going to die in that basement and he is not going to escape the slum he's living in despite wanting to, because the answer to how did he make all that money in what ended up being a dread dream sequence? The answer is he can't. That's why they didn't show it to you, is there is no way for him to do that. And so just that idea of like how crushing the idea of wealth and class is, and how, I don't want to say hopeless it is, but that it's not nothing. That this idea that I think we have in American society, all right, here's the 30-second soapbox. The idea that we have in American society that all you have to do is pull yourself up by your bootstraps, and if you just try hard enough, you can do anything you want with your life and you can achieve the American dream just by trying. That's just not the reality for so many people, right? Like, right. There is not opportunity for people that don't already, if you don't already have money, it's hard to make money. And that it is a vicious loop that is a captive like box for people who are honestly trying and honestly should be able to make their way in the world. To me, it was sort of it's a South Korean film that seems to be a pretty decent indictment of the American dream to me.
Dude, that's a great line. I would just echo that, and I would say, so many times when we talk about class and poverty, we talk about really simple, trite answers, which is like, hey, you just need to work harder and you can work for the dream. Or B, hey, if we just do this program and provide this and this and this, it will fix the problem.
Yeah.
This movie brings dignity to all sides to say, this problem is so complicated. There are individuals, there is ego, there is pride, there's the reality of economic conditions, and there's so many things. But it literally leads into life and death. It literally leads into a war between classes. And it literally can lead into, I feel completely trapped, and to, like, a parasite, yeah, it has a, you know, pejorative meaning, but the goal, the reason the parasite is like, I cannot stay alive unless I feed off of you. And everyone in this movie cannot stay alive unless they feed off each other. The rich have to feed off the poor to stay alive. The poor have to feed off the rich to stay alive. And all of those complicated dynamics and what they mean, and what they mean on a human level and on a level of dignity, as well as like a society level, there are no easy answers. But my God, we need great movies like this that make us not just go to the trite, easy answers to the political talking points, but really think about everything that's at stake and what matters, and, you know, how to find better ways and better solutions, or at least why these things happen and how emotionally important they are to the people it happens to. So that's why I love this movie. It's why I wanted to talk about it. That's why I love that it won Best Picture.
Yeah, I agree. I love that it won Best Picture too. I think that's awesome. First, and it is trivia point, meaning of the movie trivia point, it is the first and only non-English language film to win Best Picture, correct?
I believe that's correct. Yeah. It won Best Foreign, it won Best Picture. You know, and what's so fascinating to me about this movie is, like, when foreign films first come out, most people I'd talk to, I'd be like, hey, have you seen this movie? And they'd be like, I don't really like subtitles. Right. You know what everyone has now?
Subtitles.
Subtitles. Do you watch movies with subtitles?
I don't. Well, okay, I do. I've been watching a lot of British television, a lot of shows like that are like from the BBC or produced in Britain. And sometimes those accents, I really am not sure. So I'll watch English language with subtitles if it's British.
I would love to know, like, I'm going to put a poll question on our Facebook page, but I would love to know from you, do you watch movies with subtitles or not? But I think it's probably like 60% or so of people who do it. And yeah. Bong Joon-ho, when he like accepted his Oscar, he's like, don't let, you know, a few inch little subtitles keep you from a world of great cinema. And that's part of the legacy of this film. It's not just a, you know, it's like the power of foreign film. And I think more and more, we just had the Oscars and Zone of Interest, Anatomy of a Fall, like these, you know, foreign films with subtitles are becoming more and more just part of the zeitgeist. And people are seeing them and watching them and talking to them. And instead of just being aberrations, they're like, no, international film is part of the landscape. And many of it is just as good, if not better, than American films. And I love that.
Yeah. My favorite film of 2022 was All Quiet on the Western Front, which was entirely in German. And it's it was, to me, the best film of the year. I wish it had won. Did it win Best Picture? No.
It did not.
It did not. I wish it had.
A little movie called Everything Everywhere All at Once.
That's right. That's right. Which I also like. Okay, I'm fine with it. That All Quiet on the Western Front was one of the best experiences I had in movie theaters that year. And it's entirely subtitled because it's a German film. It's beautiful.
Hey, if anyone's still around, give me your quick Oscar reaction. What did you think?
Oh, Oscar reaction. I'm pretty satisfied. Like I always hate when there's a juggernaut that wins everything because I want to see all the great films recognized. But like everything that Oppenheimer won, I'm like, yeah. every one of those people, I would have felt bad for them if they didn't win, because I do think that movie was so good. I'm glad it won Best Picture. Every actor and director, like Chris Nolan winning Best Director, is for that movie is a slam dunk, right? Like everything about that I like. I have not seen Poor Things, but I was a little bummed that Lily Gladstone did not win. I know that Emma Stone gave a great performance, but I thought it would have been really cool for Lily Gladstone to win just because of how quiet that performance was. And I think we really venerate the big loud performances, and I just loved how powerful her performance was. We talked about it on the Killers of the Flower Moon episode, but just how quiet and like emotional her performance was. I was really kind of gunning for her. So I was bummed about that, but
I think it's the better performance still. I mean, Emma Stone, who I adore, I loved her speech. It was my favorite moment of the night. And so I'm totally cool with her winning, but it is kind of a classic Oscar film, which is like a beautiful celebrity making themselves kind of ugly and weird and goofy and just kind of going all out. And it was like, okay, this is like a Rain Man, you know, like it made me think of Tropic Thunder with like Simple Jack. But again, I love her. I think it's great. But I was rooting for Lily Gladstone. But I think for the most part, like all the right movies won. And I think it was a good year, a good batch of movies. I think my favorite was probably Anatomy of a Fall from this year. But depending on the day, different movies jumped out to me. Like, I love The Holdovers. I really like Killer of the Flower Moon. So there was a lot of like great films. And it was just fun to see such a diverse canon of films being celebrated. I appreciated that.
Me too.
All right. Well, good episode, Andrew. Thanks for listening, everyone. Please like, subscribe, follow us, and we will see you next time on The Meaning of the Movie.